Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Nasiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career, what they do, how they got there, and advice for other veterans who want to do the same. Today's episode number 152 with Aaron Millage.
And so about 3 years prior to me leaving the active duty side of things, I started using kind of the same planning process we use in the fighter business. And that is, you start from the target and you work backwards. And so you identify the termination criteria or end state, and then you just moonwalk back to the current situation. And you fill in all of the gaps, your assets, the threats, contingencies, limiting factors, all the things that you normally do in a planning process. Well, it works when you're moving into a new career, as it turns out. And so after enough iterations of the planning process, and it doesn't have to be formal, a lot of it was done over beer and conversations with my wife, you should see some common thread of what your passions are and what you're equipped to do and what your accepted risk or uncertainty is. So you sort of have this trade space to work within, and hopefully that gives you some insight.
Special thanks to Ben Grissamore for making the introduction to Aaron for today's interview. I really enjoyed our conversation. One of the reasons why I think that you should listen to this episode is that in countless interviews I've had on the show, veterans advise that one of the best things you can do to prepare for your transition to a civilian career is to take on financial responsibility. Most of the people I've interviewed have said it's taken longer than they anticipated to find that first job. And so the more you have saved up, the more freedom you have to really take the time to find your ideal career. So in the first part of today's interview, Aaron shares about his career, which is as a financial advisor. He talks about what that's like. He talks about how he helps veterans and others get a firm foundation in their finances, whatever their goals may be. And I think it's the first time I've had this sort of career path on. So we really dive into what that looks like. In the second part of the interview, we dive into entrepreneurship, because Aaron started his own financial advising company, and we talk about what that's like. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes with references to everything we discuss, and you'll find a link to be able to leave a positive review on iTunes. It would mean a lot if you're able to leave that. It helps get the word out about the show. So with that, let's dive in to my interview with Aaron Millage. Well, joining me today on a snowy day located between Denver and Boulder in Erie, Colorado, is Aaron Millage. Aaron, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thanks for having me.
I wanted to give listeners a brief background for you. Aaron is the co-founder and the chief compliance officer of Targeted Wealth Solutions, which is an independent registered investment advisor that provides comprehensive wealth management across all stages of their clients' lives. Aaron started out at Emory University, after which he served as a fighter pilot in the U.S. Air Force for over 12 years. After his service in the Air Force, he founded Targeted Wealth Solutions, and he holds an MBA from Indiana University's Kelly School of Business. So, Aaron, one of the things I wanted to start with is you left the Air Force after 12 years of service, which I know is kind of that difficult range. It's kind of like, do I stay in for retirement or do I make the transition now? How did you approach that decision?
Man, that's a great question, and I'll frame that with, I went through the ROTC program when I was in college, and so, which was basically analogous to having your cake and eating it too. And so that decision and then that experience played a big role into leaving the military. And so I definitely wanted to have some cake and eat it. And so, and there were multiple factors, and I believe that's true for everyone leaving the military, right? For me, it was a deliberate decision to reorient my family life and pursue something uniquely personal, because I felt like I'd achieved what I really wanted to in the aviation world and definitely burned myself out doing that. And I was really passionate about starting something of my own in some capacity in financial services. But that's not to say it was an overnight decision. So you hit on kind of the issues that come up when kind of making that mid-career choice to punch. And so it was a choice that I spent about 3 years shaping and refining. And this is from, kind of the beginning of hey, what is life outside the Air Force look like? Obviously discussing that with my wife and taking family considerations into the whole decision process. And the trade-offs were a big part of it, especially from, to be honest, a healthcare perspective. We had two kids at the time. Now we have three, and one of my daughters has some special needs that would have been pretty tough to support from an insurance perspective. And so as such, and really this is a big part of what we preach as a company when we help folks who are career changers or founding a startup. We took a hard look at the family's balance sheet, especially, you know, potential income sources, assets to liabilities, and things of that nature. And because financing an entrepreneurial venture is a mixture of personal and professional money management. And I think there's a potential for founders to overlook that overlap. So the outcome of that exercise within our own family basically indicated the need to supplement startup income with something else. And that something else became part-time position as a traditional reservist in the Air Force Reserve, which added a little more income and preserved health care and retirement benefits. And so, you know, that was a nice mix of having your cake and eating it too, from, you know, now you had the ability to go off on your own and launch something in the civilian sector, but still had a little bit of supplemental income on the side and healthcare benefits. And so the optionality value of part-time service in some capacity is something that I would encourage folks to really look into when they start this whole adventure.
That's great. And so your the majority of your healthcare then is provided still by the Air Force.
Absolutely. And it is, I am the standard television advertisement of 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year. And so it obviously you have those benefits of healthcare and accruing points for retirement, but you also have, you know, the ability to get into an aspect of military service that may have been previously closed off to you. So for instance, you know, I worked in Space Command, which, you know, I had no real experience with space at all, and it was fascinating. And so from a personal development and just kind of, you know, keeping things interesting, it's a great opportunity.
That's great. That's I think a really well-rounded way of addressing the kind of reserves and that the supplemental income and the medical care provided. I think that's very compelling. And I imagine too, it for a lot of people who are intimidated by the transition, maintaining that continuity is also a nice way to not just jump into the deep end and be in a completely unfamiliar environment with unfamiliar people around you, and you maintain some connection in the military, which could be very helpful.
100% agree. And I think you mentioned in a previous episode about these intangibles that the military provides you, kind of like the security and the value of service and direction. And it is difficult to leave that security of what you've been used to for, you know, in my case, the past decade, and jump right in. And so, you know, I would say you're very much on point with that insight that it keeps you tied in to things that you value on a personal and professional level and makes that transition easier, in my opinion. It certainly has for me.
That's great. And if you were speaking with someone on active duty, how would you explain what your company, Targeted Wealth Solutions, does?
So like you mentioned, we're an independent registered investment advisor, and that's the technical and I suppose the legal term. The better answer is that we're just former combat aviators turned financial advisors who help career changers. I mean, that includes transition military folks and business owners plan and realize financial goals. And so we're entrepreneurial in spirit and philosophy. And so we approach the traditional financial advisory business differently than I think the majority do. And so that gives us a lot of latitude in which to work to kind of solve these problems for folks or get them set up on a path that they previously thought was unattainable, just based off of, you know, their financial situation or what they thought was they could realize in their own lives.
How do you go about doing that? Like, what have you found effective with helping people prepare for those transitions? Like, what does that look like if someone was a client of yours?
So I'll give you an example of a client we recently helped who's leaving the military and founding a startup of his own. And so what we did when we built this plan, and I'll say, you know, if I kind of let you peek behind the curtain, and the majority of advisors that we've run into have kind of a very modular planning process, meaning that they input data into the system and it spits out, you know, you have some percentage of probability of reaching your retirement goals. That is relatively, I won't say unusable or invaluable to startup founders, but they have a different kind of need when it comes to financial planning. And so, like we did in our own lives, we take a look at really the resources that the family has and balance out, okay, you know, your burn rate in this guy, in the client's example, it will overwhelm your family income. So we need to kind of figure out when you start raising capital, what that looks like, because, you know, you're bootstrapping this to the maximum extent possible. But, you know, in his case, his wife was working. And so they have dual income up to a point. But his initial plan and his initial cash flow analysis was way, way, way undershooting what we thought was more realistic, again, based off our personal experience. And so we crafted this kind of bespoke plan that really took into account the benefits that he could realize from his wife's employment, and also when he went to fundraise, you know, the kind of the target amount that he should shoot for, and then created some budgeting help for when he was outsourcing the development of kind of his wireframe and UI, and then also added some hurdles and just said, man, listen, if you reach 18 months and you're not at this point, you need to pivot to something else because you will be unable to realize these other goals if you stay on this path. And so I think introducing those checkpoints is something that's very unique and very useful and certainly different than kind of your standard financial advisor does, who just, you know, hands you a kind of a packet of paper and says, hey, everything's good to go. You got a 80% chance of making it to retirement and not running out of money.
I really love that checkpoint idea. And, you know, having been running a technology startup now for 8 years, I can see the value. And having seen so many different entrepreneurs of, you know, when you're in it, you're in the trenches. And my experience has been, it's very easy to lose perspective. And there can be situations. I'm thinking of a friend who I advised his company, and, you know, he was just in it and so in love with it for so long, but they were not getting market traction after year after year after year. And it was difficult but necessary to let them, you know, to let him know as a friend, like, hey, I think it's time to move on. It's time to give yourself permission to either, you know, pivot or move on to the next thing. But I love that thought of upfront setting those milestones for whether you're starting a company or whatever it is. I'm sure that applies to so many different career options, but giving the person a little bit of a feeling of like, hey, you've got 18 months, give it everything you've got. And then at the end of that, we need to think of something different if this career or this lifestyle or whatever it is not working out. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. And you're right. We, instead of relying on friends, to break the bad news, we kind of present those milestones because, you know, when we back it up with our assumptions and calculations, it's very hard to rationalize your way out of that. And so I think it helps folks, and you're right with career changers, especially. It doesn't matter if you're starting something new or jumping to a new career field, or, you know, you're a business owner, or, you know, you just want to take a sabbatical because you're just a busy professional and you want to take some time off to explore some other interests. Having that accountability built into a plan, backed up by rigorous analysis and common sense and kind of an unbiased, just we're looking at the numbers and kind of providing a realistic view of what we think is realistic. And I think that adds real value to people, certainly who are struggling with uncertainty or like you said, are so close to the problem that they just can't see it, that the wall is crumbling around them.
Does someone need to be located in the Denver area or Colorado to work with you, or do you work with people remotely as well?
Remotely, and that's the way we prefer it. So, you know, if we started Targeted Wealth with this idea of serving primarily the military community, and having an office serving military folks is silly, right? Because we're moving every 2 to 3 years. Mm. And so we spent a lot of time building out our tech stack that would allow us to do everything, you know, not only within the context of compliance, but also with meeting client needs remotely. And so, you know, truth be told, we prefer to work remotely on the client's timelines when they're comfortable, instead of bringing them into an office, into our environment. We'd rather inject ourselves into the client's environment.
And I was just curious, you know, obviously every person is different. And if you said their ambitions are different, their life is different, their obligations are different. I'm just curious, though, in the work you've done with veterans so far, is there any trends that you see and maybe misconceptions about finances and transitioning to a civilian career, or any kind of common questions you get that might add value for people listening right now?
First off, I think that veterans are some of the most engaged and well-informed clients. And so right off the bat, it makes that if we could pick clients, obviously those are the ones we pick. We're engaged, well-informed, and clients. And so I think that there's a misconception, though, that I've educated myself, I've done well managing my finances up to this point, through deployments and moves and, you know, advancements in rank. I don't really need a financial advisor. But the counterpoint, I think, is that because you have veterans have done such a good job managing the household finances, that it makes collaborating with a kind of an unbiased financial advisor so much more valuable. And so that is a common thread that has emerged. And the other thing is really, I think there's a lot of uncertainty on just employer benefits that you're used to kind of a, you know, Uncle Sam gives you a limited menu of benefits, right? But it's the same for everybody. Everybody gets the same stuff. And so, you know, you swear in and here you go. Here's how you enroll into life insurance. Here's how to get going with through a savings plan. Here's how to, you know, get free legal documents processed by the JAG. And so those things go away. And so how do you replace those is a question we often get. And sometimes it's not even asked because it's just assumed that, you know, those things have happened so easily and automatically in the past that it just continues when you go to civilian employment. Hmm.
How do you work with people? Is it like a percentage? Is it a standard fee, or is it kind of very individual based on what the person wants?
It's completely individualized. And so, you know, we have two models. The first is an asset center management, and that's kind of holistic asset management and financial planning and you know, keeping the train on the tracks from a financial perspective, certainly from an asset management perspective. And then we also have an hourly engagement process that you know, we define the scope of the work based off what the client tells us that they need help with, or they like help with. And you know, we kind of present that quote and say, you know, yay or nay, we're ready to go. And then we work that until the client is satisfied. And then we can update that as life goes on and changes happen. But yeah, those are the two main ways that from a revenue perspective, it's either asset center managed, percentage of asset center management for ongoing support and planning, or hourly planning fees.
I was just thinking about the, you know, the misconceptions you were talking about. I can imagine, you know, my experience with myself and then in speaking with so many different veterans is the military community seems like it has a strong go it alone, but like I can figure this out for myself mentality. There's like a very independent and kind of self-motivated strain that seems to run through a lot of veterans. And I noticed that for myself, and that, you know, there's so many times where I've just wanted to kind of, as an entrepreneur, you just kind of figure things out your own, and that's great. And I've also realized 9 years in the value of learning from other people and, you know, seeking advice, and how literally an hour of an expert's time in sales or marketing or whatever functional area, an hour of their time can save me hundreds of hours, literally hundreds of hours of making mistakes or doing it incorrectly or doing it suboptimally. And so one of the things I appreciate about what you're saying is I can imagine that the typical veteran might view this field as like, oh, I'm sufficient on my own, or I've done this and I've gone it alone. But I can imagine the value that you bring to the table, where this is what you and your team focus on. And I think of, we have a legal firm for Storybox, my company. And, you know, when we have fundraised, we've raised about $3 million in funding, we would get term sheets from potential investors. And I remember my lawyer said this to me. He said, you know, you will see in your life as an entrepreneur, you'll probably see, you know, maybe 5 or 6 term sheets, maybe 10 if you do multiple startups. We as a law firm, this is the 5,000th term sheet I've seen. I'm able to point out what's wrong and what's right and what's consistent, what's inconsistent. And I kind of view you through that lens, where you've got this very specific expertise, and it might be natural for someone to say, hey, I've got this, but to kind of challenge that thinking that there's a lot that you bring to the table and a lot that you can provide that someone might, they don't even know that they don't know that series of knowledge.
Right. And we love the unknown unknowns. And to that point, we add value that way, but we've always been surprised at, you have these, and you're exactly right. You have these professionals who, they live and bring your case term sheets. They live and breathe that, right? That's what they do. But what they don't necessarily do is interact with other professionals in your circle. Right. And we found some really good opportunities of, you know, for lack of a better term, cracking the whip for clients, professional providers, getting everybody on the same page, talking the same language, and making sure the left hand is talking to the right hand, because you have this expertise that's so valuable, but in kind of a holistic perspective of the client's life is suffers from myopia of everybody is just looking through a soda straw in their own little domain. And so, you know, we found it pretty valuable to be the quarterback, so to speak, and kind of herd the cats for clients.
And I wanted to, you know, I think this is an incredible resource for the military community. And but I also wanted to talk about, you know, as a veteran who started your own thing, what that journey has been like. And I wanted to know, you know, what was the genesis of this? At what point did you start to get into this type of industry? And how did it come about where you thought, I'm actually going to start my own company on this?
So it has been a long time, but very concentrated in certain more discrete time frames. And so back a million years ago, when I was first flying for the Air Force, the policy was, hey, you don't need a master's degree to get promoted. And so everybody kind of made their life plans based on that instruction. And then it changes that, hey, you know, you actually need a master's degree to get promoted. And the pendulum has swung back and forth several times since then. But I was at the point in my career where, you know, I wanted to go back to school. I had the bandwidth to do so. And I had no idea what I wanted to do. And so my dad, who was a career changer and a business owner, said, you know, you may find value in just getting an MBA. You have, you know, no real business educational background, so an MBA may be interesting to you. Certainly the financial aspects, the quantitative aspects of an MBA would interest me. And so I thought, all right, you know what, dad's probably right. I'll go back to school and get an MBA and you know, maybe figure out what I want to do when I grow up. And so after I finished the MBA, I realized three things. The first, I had no desire to work for a big corporation. The second, I really enjoyed the quantitative aspects of finance. And the third was I had no idea where I wanted to end up or how to get there. But I think that uncertainty and certainly the motivation to eliminate it was a huge piece of the puzzle. And so from there, you know, you reach out to your bro network, right? The veteran network, and you talk to anybody who will talk to you. And so I talked to investment bankers, private equity guys, asset managers, bond traders, financial advisors, anyone that had a role in finance that I could possibly have an interest in that maybe I just don't know. And so that was just an ad hoc method. And it worked to build a rough foundation. And so about 3 years, so this would be 2012, 3 years prior to me leaving the active duty side of things, I started using kind of the same planning process we use in the fighter business. And that is you start from the target and you work backwards. And so you identify the termination criteria or end state, and then you just moonwalk back to the current situation. And you fill in all of the gaps, your assets, the threats, contingencies, limiting factors, all the things that you would normally do in a planning process. Well, it works when you're moving into a new career, as it turns out. And so after enough iterations of the planning process, and it doesn't have to be formal, a lot of it was done over beer and conversations with my wife. You should see some common thread of what your passions are and what you're equipped to do and what your accepted risk or uncertainty is. So you sort of have this trade space to work within, and hopefully that gives you some insight. But for me, that elegant method really sucked because I had this bias against financial advisors from the get-go based on some of my parents' experience. And so, but I never looked at the counterfactual of what if my parents, who, like I said, were business owners and career changers, had a financial advisor that worked in their best interest and provided this kind of full spectrum solution to issues that are unique to them, again, as business owners and career changers. And so, you know, I eventually arrived at this place, with a little divine intervention, I'm certain of that, where I realized that there was this opportunity in the financial advisory business that was the true intersection of personal and professional interests. But again, it kind of took this really formal method and just this ad hoc and realizing that you do have implicit biases that may really limit, you know, what your potential options are when you leave the military.
I love the way that you explain 3 years out how you approach the transition. It's a nice blend of the familiar of what you know in the military and applying it to the unknown. I think that was a really great explanation. And one of the things I wanted to ask about is, and I know that a lot of listeners have reached out to me about this question in particular, about what your day-to-day life looks like. And it seems like more than any other question, this kind of starts to give them a feel about what it's like to be a financial planner, what's it like to be an entrepreneur. And so if you could be as granular as you're comfortable being in terms of time, you know, time into the office and hours and what you're doing, I'd love to just have you walk us through maybe a representative or maybe even just a random day of what that looks like in your career path.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll preface it with this. The interview with Wes Gray was, I mean, everything that he said has some applicability to what we do or, you know, what my day looks like. Personally, I'm a big fan of Wes and Alpha Architect. And so it was interesting to hear him mention a couple of things that resonate, on a firm level with how we do things. But the verb that Wes uses, grind, has this tactical meaning in the fighter business. And it's an interesting parallel because guys like to romanticize this particular tactic. A lot of times it's something it's not. And so when used in the right situation with well-defined objectives and conditions, the tactic is great. But when misused, you really end up on the back foot with not a whole lot of anything accomplished. And so I bring that up because I think a lot of startups have this potential to fall into this grind mentality in an effort to feel productive. And maybe it's more pronounced with veteran startups because Uncle Sam doesn't give you a whole lot of latitude to fail. So it becomes really tempting to replicate this maximization of effort on all fronts of your startup to avoid failure. But if you don't have a clear end state or plan in place, you just grind for the sake of the verb. And so with all that said, we try to break down the day into modules that we can work through as an ensemble within the firm. So I'll back up one step and say that a lot of traditional advisory firms, it's kind of a silo endeavor, right? Each advisor has his or her own book of business. Their clients are theirs, and never the twain shall meet. But that, I think, is not the way that, one, we learned how to do business as kind of a team effort in certainly the flying community. But providing a solution to the client, I think, is there's great benefit in bringing everybody on the same page. So that's my preface to all that. I get up early because the kids are early risers. So, you know, we'll hang out and play and get ready for school until about 7:30. And a lot of that is, you know, by design, because again, I missed out on all this family time, on the active duty side. So I'm very, sensitive to that and deliberate with how I spend, time with the family. That is by far a priority in my life. And so after that, I'll catch up on overnight news and market developments, and then we'll handle any fires that came up after the close of business from the previous day. And this is across the firm. And so, we'll have typically caught up via, you know, some chat function of just, hey, these are the things that happened the day prior, to recap, you know, we need to put out these fires. That gets us to around 10 o'clock, at which point we'll kind of start dividing up and tackling the goals we're working towards for the quarter. And so we try to come up with a limited number of what we call enablers, or these factors we believe best contribute to achieving a goal, and start working towards those. And so for me, that can involve some aspect of marketing or lead generation, or reaching out to certain centers of influence like estate attorneys or CPAs, building client-facing materials, researching a particular topic for either our content or for application in the asset management side of things or the planning side of things. The point is that we try to define those tasks in the context of a longer term goal and then work towards them in some measurable fashion. So you're just, again, not just grinding for the sake of grinding. I'll usually try to schedule client meetings in the afternoon or at lunch. So that, you know, usually involves quarterly reviews to talk about portfolio performance, or, you know, kind of upcoming expected life changes, or talking about those hurdles or milestones that we mentioned earlier. We'll make updates to financial plans, or you know, we'll start up working on a particular issue that a client comes up with, or we'll just sit with the client and work collaboratively on, you know, some aspect of their financial situation where they just have some level of uncertainty about. And then after all of that, we'll have kind of a recap with Brandon and Ben, who are the other two advisors in the firm, to get everybody on the same page for the next day. But it also is the time where the ensemble really comes together to solve a client issue that's come up, because everybody brings different expertise to the table. And so, again, I believe that's super important to get that perspective and perhaps even a divergent opinion, so that when we present a client with a proposed solution, you know, you've looked through it through all these lenses, not only of your own, but through the other advisors, and try to eliminate as much bias as you can.
That's great. And you know, another component of this that a lot of people reach out about and ask about is this thought of work-life balance. Like, how would you speak to that? Either what your work-life balance is like, and also how someone on active duty might think about work-life balance, just based on the volume of questions I get around this. I get the sense that there's a lot of fear about, you know, what a civilian career looks like, and whether they'll have any time for their family or the things that are important to them. So what's your work-life balance look like, and any thoughts on that?
I try to stop around 5 to be with family. But again, work always pops up, and certainly the way we inject ourselves into the client environment, you know, you may work on weekends or after 5. But the typically the first things I'll schedule are family events, when we kind of go out in the week. And that, I mean, that's probably very different from other people who the first thing they schedule are business related activities. It doesn't matter. I think what matters is in a civilian capacity, you have the ability to, especially in a startup, to define what you want your work-life balance to be. Whereas in the military, you largely don't, for various reasons. And so I make it part of my structure to sit down and figure out, okay, what is this week, this month, look like? And then what am I willing to sacrifice? And that's a huge benefit of running a startup, is that, you know, you have the ability to do that. But I think it may be off-putting to a lot of folks, because it's just so different from, well, for so long, you know, the mission came first, and now I have the opportunity to put my family first. And, you know, is that right? You know, here I am trying to put food on the table or get the startup off the ground, but, you know, do I feel like personally I can afford to spend all this time with my family? And so, you know, I'm very much a fan of running a business on your own or on the side, just because of that flexibility. But you have to make the conscious decision to find that work-life balance. And for me, you know, I have, you know, fairly rigid start and stop times to be with family. But in the middle there, you know, when the kids are at school, it is the grind. That is my grind time. And so that's how I approach it.
I would, I really appreciate that. I think that's a great, great explanation for listeners. I'll put this in the show notes, but there is a book called Deep Work. I've talked about it on the show before. It's by Cal Newport, and he is a big advocate of exactly what Aaron just described, which is, if I'm interpreting this correctly, it's having constraints in your work life. And he talks about, you know, all the body of research to show that if you set whatever works for you, let's just say it is 8 to 5 or 9 to 5, and you are really diligent about that, in a lot of ways it drives you to be more efficient. It drives you to prioritize. There was an article years and years ago by the founders of Shutterfly, and they said, look, when we first started our company, we worked 18-hour days. And when we did a postmortem, when we looked back, the last 6 hours, we ended up working on lower priority things that in the end never even mattered. It was polishing the Titanic. And when they started to really enforce for them, it was 12-hour days. When they started to really enforce that, they got just as much, if not more, done. And in Deep Work, it talks about a lot about the benefits of having time to get bored and to have creativity really come back and to really rejuvenate. And so I really appreciate the way that you explain that, Aaron. I think that's a great way of putting it, and also just showing that, like, you know, you do get that choice in your civilian career. You can choose how much weight you want to put on your profession versus your personal life, and there are no ends to ways to going about structuring and forming exactly the life and exactly the balance that you'd like.
Yeah, constraints are, I mean, that is the perfect way to describe it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And if someone is listening, and actually, you're a unique case, because there's kind of two aspects, but maybe we'll take the first one is someone, if someone is thinking of becoming a financial planner, financial advisor, what are some indications that they may like that career path or dislike it? And then, since you're also an entrepreneur, I would ask the same question of, like, if someone is aspiring to start their own company, what are signs that they might like or dislike that as a career path?
I think both. And so for the financial advisor piece, you know, there are so many nuances to the definition, based off of, you know, the size of the firm you're with. And, you know, if you're kind of more of a private banker role, or you're more of a financial planner, in the independent space or the smaller space. But at the end of the day, I think that one, you have, you know, this humility and approachability and credibility that allow people to come to you and, I mean, bear their finances, right? Which is a hugely personal endeavor for folks to open up the checkbook, right? But if you're passionate about helping, and you're genuine in that passion and that desire to help, and obviously you have an aptitude for looking at things kind of this big macro view and putting the pieces together and say, okay, well, you know, I think you don't have enough life insurance because, you know, your kids will be able to go to college if you die. But, you know, you and then you flip the lens and you say, well, you're invested completely wrong for your risk tolerance. And then you say, well, and you, your retirement age is way too young. You'll never get there. If you kind of wrap your arms around this massive moving problem, and you like that challenge of hurting the cats. I think it's super rewarding, and because you make a genuine impact on people who, really lose sleep at night over their finances or reaching some particular goal, or you prevent the train from derailing at the right time. And so there's an immediate feedback there for a financial advisor as a startup. And again, I'll hit on what Wes Gray said. There is nobody telling you what to do. And some people don't do well in that situation. And that can be the case for a financial advisor too. And so, as an independent advisor in this fiduciary capacity running a startup, we have this huge, chessboard on which to play and carve out a niche and solve some of these seemingly intractable financial problems for clients. But there's no checklist or technical training, so to speak, for that. And so you have to be comfortable with, like we talked about, building those constraints in your professional endeavors, and also figuring out what you have to do on a day-to-day basis and then doing it, and not looking to someone to tell you, here are your marching orders, go out and execute. And so from the startup perspective, I think if you have this passion and you're comfortable with the idea of, grinding it towards a specific objective with nobody telling you how to get there, I mean, the startup way is, and you're okay with bearing a little uncertainty. I love the startup environment.
Yeah, I love that explanation. I just added there is no shortage of ambiguity on that entrepreneurial path, and I just I admire the people who go directly from active duty to entrepreneurship as you have done, and I just have even more respect because I think that for most veterans going from the structure and establishment of the military into a civilian career is, that's like going from a highway to off-roading, and then, you add in entrepreneurship and that's like going to the Grand Canyon. There's like no roads, there's no guidance, like literally anything is possible, and there's, you can structure things in any ways you have, but sometimes you don't have the context for how other companies do that or best practices or things like that. So I imagine for some people hearing that is terrifying, and for other people it's motivating. And so I love that thought of self-knowledge and seeing, if this is something that turns you on and gets you excited, it's something worth investigating. And if that's something where you're not quite ready for yet or don't want at all, that's something to potentially avoid.
And I'll even throw out there that even if it terrifies you, I think it's an answer that you may have to address as a candidate for employment in an established mature firm, because a lot of these roles have very self-directed responsibilities. And so I ran into situations when I was kind of gathering data for the transition, these informational interviews of typically smaller firms that don't have the capacity to have a formal training program, especially for a transitioning veteran or a career changer, where they had some tale of woe where they brought in a very, very accomplished former military member, and they were just paralyzed because nobody was telling them what to do. And so these employers were very gun shy about hiring transitioning veterans for that very reason. And so if it terrifies you, it's probably a good thing, but because hopefully you'll address that, because I think there's a good chance that it'll come up during an interview of hey, you're used to receiving your air tasking order and executing missions off of that. Well, there is nothing that like that here. And so, how do you overcome that? What are your thoughts on that?
That's great. And you spoke about this a little bit already, but I'm curious, anything that you did on active duty to prepare for your eventual career, and in particular, any resources, be it books or conferences or podcasts or anything that someone who's on active duty today might take advantage of to start making some headway towards their eventual civilian career?
Yeah. And I can't remember who said it. One of your previous guests mentioned something about budgeting for personal development. And I'm a huge believer in that. And so, to that end, I don't have any particular recommendations for books or seminars. But I think it's important to develop yourself in a capacity that is materially different than the function the military has given you for a wide range of reasons. Not only if you want to go out and start something on your own. But if you're on active duty, obviously, in the formal education side of things, I tilted my courses in the MBA towards finance. I enrolled in the Chartered Financial Analyst program. I took some courses through Breaking Into Wall Street for financial modeling, and then took huge advantage of Coursera for personal broadening and deepening a knowledge of a particular subject. And so I built up that bucket of personal development.
Anything just on that? I think Coursera is such a great resource. Any courses you remember taking, just kind of to give people a flavor of the type of things you were learning?
So I learned the statistical programming language R, because it has a huge application to the quantitative aspects of finance. And so everything from, intro to data science with R to modeling time series to data visualization, things that I had no idea personally if they would be relevant in my new venture, but they interested me and they kept my brain engaged and they opened these little rabbit holes to, blogs like Wes Gray's blog. And so I think they're more of my experience in Coursera. I did Stanford's machine learning course, just again because it was interesting. And if I pulled something that was viable for a future employment out of it, great. But if not, at least I kept my brain from atrophying,
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. Well, I know that we are coming up on the end of our time. I always like to reserve the last question more open-ended, and that's that we've discussed so many things helpful for active duty members and veterans, but I'm curious if there's anything we didn't discuss that you would want to share with listeners as some parting words.
I think that obviously, starting earlier is better if you're transitioning or even exploring. You don't have to, if you're not ready to pull the trigger on leaving the military. I think it's a worthwhile thought experiment to run through the diligence of seeing what the other side would look like. And hopefully that walks you into groups like the Veteran Mentors Network on LinkedIn. Maybe it walks you into American Corporate Partners, which I took advantage of, and it was hugely helpful in helping me eliminate possibilities, which I often think that should be your first goal. When looking at potential outside is to figure out what you don't want to do. And then certainly the Goldman Sachs Veterans Integration Program is a huge advantage for folks who are curious about financial services and transitioning veterans into the financial sector. And then, the internet has disrupted everything. And so just consuming content and just staying engaged. And again, just that ongoing thought experiment of, what would it look like if I really jump ship into the civilian sector? What would it look like if I form my own startup? There's so much content out there. Just to be diligent in curating that and consuming it. I think you can be ahead of the game in no time if you're really interested in seeing what a career change or a transition to the civilian sector would look like.
That's great. And for listeners, I'll add in the show notes, I'll add links to the Veterans Mentor Network, Goldman Sachs Veteran Integration Program, all of those things. I'll also link to an interview that came out a couple days ago with Andrew Neuwirth, who went through the Goldman Sachs Veterans Integration Program. He talks about that in great detail. It seems like an incredible program. And American Corporate Partners, I'll actually have an episode in a couple days here with one of the senior managers there. It's an incredible free resource that connects you with mentors in whatever industry or functional role you want to go into. There is no reason I can possibly conceive of why every single veteran should not be using them. So I'll include links to all of these in the show notes. Aaron, thank you so so much for your time on this and for your advice and sharing your story. And for listeners interested, I'll also have in the show notes a link to Aaron's company, Targeted Wealth Solutions. If what he has talked about resonates with you, if you are wanting to either prepare for your transition, or if you've already made the transition and you're looking for just a path to a stronger and more established financial future, I would strongly recommend reaching out to them and having that conversation, because you can see the value they bring to the table and how they can help save you time and money and help you get to your goals, whatever they may be, a lot faster. So thank you so much, Aaron.
Thanks, Justin. I really, really appreciate it. Had a good time.
Surface.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode. A couple things that stuck out to me that have just stayed with me since this interview. I love Aaron's thoughts on budgeting for personal development. I'm a huge advocate of this. I think that thought of investing in yourself is such a valuable tool throughout your civilian career, throughout your life. And I like how Aaron talked about that. I also thought it was great to hear the perspective of someone who left at that 12-year point, which is a difficult time to leave the military, especially with all the health care and supplemental income. But I like how he talked about using reserves to keep things going and to make that possible. I really enjoyed him talking about planning ahead, and I loved how he applied these military tactics to the transition. And I also thought this idea of working days and into modules is really a really cool concept. And then lastly, I really appreciated how he talked about work-life balance and how you have autonomy in your civilian career to define exactly what you want there. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share it on social channels. It would be great to get this in front of more veterans. Another way to do that is by leaving a positive review on iTunes. Thank you so much. I will be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.